So Hare Krishna, dear devotees, welcome to the class. It's also my presentation for the first canto, Bhakti Vaibhava. It's part of my assessment to give a class, and please bear with me. I'm going to attempt to present to you this morning, but I'm not so technically minded. So I'm going to try and get my PowerPoint slideshow to work. Alright. But yeah, the verse that I was meditating on for today was actually 113 of Srimad Bhagavatam. And it will be put up shortly. Vishnupraya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutta Srimani Bhakti Chaitanya Swami Iti Namine Vishnupraya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutta Srimani Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Deve Govani Vrajarine Nirvishesha Shunyavadhi Paschati Deshtarine Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagarjatam Sagana Raghunatham Vitantam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Laita Shri Vishakanvitam Scha He Krishna Karna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpati Gopesha Gopika Kantha Radha Kantha Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sita Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha kalpata rubhyascha kripa sindhubhya eva cha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Krishna, once again. I'm going to try. I apologize to the Prabhus also that it's such a setup. May have to shift position. I'm sorry about that. I will try my best to coordinate and refer to the first, let us recite the verse. Nigama kalpataro galitam palam Shruka mukam ritam dravasam yutam Vibhata bhagavatam rasam alayam Muhuraho rasika bhuvi bhavukaha. So, the verse translation reads, O expert and thoughtful men, relish Srimad Bhagavatam, the mature fruit of the desire tree of Vedic literatures. It emanated from the lips of Sri Shukadev Goswami. Therefore, this fruit has become even more tasteful, although its nectarian juice was already relishable for all, including liberated souls. This is verse 113 of Srimad Bhagavatam. And the first two verses of Srimad Bhagavatam are already seen as very core and very foundational verses. And the third one sort of brings in rasa, or juice, nectarian juice. And it's speaking about how it's not only for people of Kali Yuga, although we know that these scriptures are generally meant for us, the people of Kali Yuga. But here, the third verse of Bhagavatam is already speaking about this nectarian juice of Bhagavatam, being relished, not just by people who are conditioned, but by those who are also liberated. Those who have no need for going through the process of purification like we do. But even those who are already happy within the self, or Atmaramas, they are still relishing this transcendental subject matter. So the presentation content that I initially would like to follow would be looking at Srimad Bhagavatam at a glance. I understand that it is a different sort of breaking the chain from regular class. So I would like us all to take a step back out from the fifth canto for a while and sort of look at the Bhagavatam, just at a glance, what we see from there. And then we sort of look in the context of the first canto, because this is the one that I've been studying, and I will try to look and give that sort of look at a glance. And then I would like to speak of Srila Shukadeva Goswami, who is the speaker of Bhagavatam, and speak a little about his life story. Because although he is the speaker of Bhagavatam, there's not very much known about Srila Shukadeva Goswami. He's rather mysterious. I don't know if anyone would agree, but I found him rather mysterious, although he is, you know, very renowned as the speaker of Bhagavatam. And then I will speak a bit about his unparalleled position, which is actually my topic for today. The unparalleled position of Srila Shukadeva Goswami. So, I would like to start off by looking at a glance of the Srimad Bhagavatam. I don't know about many of us, but I didn't exactly grow up with Srimad Bhagavatam with me. I grew up hearing many stories about the Ramayana and Krishna Lila. But I didn't know what Srimad Bhagavatam was as a work. Can anyone maybe share with me an experience of what they saw when they first heard of, what they thought of when they first heard of Srimad Bhagavatam? You know, sometimes we go out on books and we sell people sets of Srimad Bhagavatam. And sometimes we read it ourselves as devotees, you know, when we're starting up and we read. And it may not always reach our expectations, or it might just, you know, blow our expectations completely, leaving it in the dust. But that's the thing, many of us don't know about it. So can anyone maybe tell me what they first thought of when they first read Srimad Bhagavatam or first heard of Srimad Bhagavatam? What did they actually think it was or was about? Yes, Pandu Prabhu. Yes, it's true. This is, as you say, as Krishna descended, and Srimad Bhagavatam is the sun that has arisen to guide us. Anyone else? Yes, Nataji. Yes, Srimad Bhagavatam is giving us the topmost literature, the topmost science of God. There are very many other literatures that Srila Vyasadeva had compiled before he compiled Srimad Bhagavatam. And yeah, this subject matter deals directly with so many different topics. It's such a wide range. Actually, because it dealt with, it's so nice that you made this point, it actually leads to the next point, that Srimad Bhagavatam deals primarily with 10 topics. And these 10 topics are encompassed. They're not just sort of set down in one point or the other and then discussed from one canto to the next. It's amazing how these 10 topics appear in almost every canto in Srimad Bhagavatam to one degree or the other, lesser degree or to a larger degree. But these topics are spread out throughout the Bhagavatam. And yeah, maybe we could run through it very quickly. Yes, Sarga and Visarga, or it deals with primary creation and secondary creation. Secondary creation is where Lord Brahma comes in, and he is creating what is known as the Brahmanda, or the material creation. However, Sarga primary creation is referring to Krishna and his first expansions. Sarga, Visarga, Sthana, the maintenance of the universe by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Sthana, the topic of Sthana deals with how Krishna and his expansion as Vishnu is maintaining the entire universe. Well, all the universes. We know that our universe is not the only one in this planetary system. There are many thousands of planets and universal systems as such. And although Brahma is in charge of creation and Lord Shiva is in charge of destruction, Vishnu has the job of maintaining all of these creations. Fourth one is Poshana, or special care and protection for the devotees of the Lord. So, yes, Krishna loves all his creation equally. But as he says in Bhagavad Gita, as they surrender unto me, you know, I reward them accordingly, or I reciprocate with them to that degree. So, of course, Krishna's devotees who are in a relationship with him, who are very dear to him, they have this mercy which they achieve. Does anyone know how to switch this off? Okay. I don't know. Sorry. I think Krishna is showing his manifestation as time, saying, "Time, I am Sharadiya Rasa." Okay. Hare Krishna. So, yes, Poshana. So, Krishna taking special care of those who surrender unto him. Uti, or the desire for creation. Why are all these universes manifested? So Uti refers to specifically the desire or the impetus to create. And then Manvantara. Bhagavatam discusses in detail, in great length, discussing how the Manus, or the specific individuals, were meant to actually give guidance to the fellow humanity, to fellow human beings. They write guidebooks, for example, like the Manu Samhita, which is the guidebook for humanity at large to follow, to get to, to achieve our highest goal and life's goal. 7. Ishanu Katha. So this is scriptural information regarding the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or Krishna, and his interaction with his devotees. So Ishanu Katha is, for me, very, very potent. For me, it was one of the most interesting and most impacting things in Bhagavatam, to hear Ishanu Katha, to hear about how the Lord associates with his devotees. And that sort of gave me hope in my Krishna consciousness that, you know, Krishna is a very personal being, and this is how he interacts with his devotees. And these are the assurances that he gives, and they are not empty. Ishanu Katha sort of solidifies my conviction in the fact that Krishna is there to reciprocate with me. 8. Nirodha, the winding up of all energies. So we know that in the material world, whatever is created will at some point or the other be destroyed or annihilated, because the nature of the material world is that it is temporary. So just as there are topics of creation in Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam also tells us about the destruction or the end of the world, the beginning of the world and the end of the world. And 9. Mukti, liberation of the conditioned souls encaged by the gross and subtle coverings of body and mind. So yes, there are many different types of liberation. And Bhagavatam speaks about, in many different places, all the different types of liberations. But it deals mainly with the transcendental loving service that's meant to be rendered unto Lord Krishna, which gives us the ultimate liberation. And Ashraya, the transcendence, this deals with the ultimate shelter. Krishna is our ultimate shelter. And Bhagavatam deals with this in the sense that it shows us why Krishna and not anyone else or anything else. Bhakti Sam is very specific, very clear why it is that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead rather than anyone else. So of these 10 topics, many of them are also discussed in Canto 1. And Canto 1 starts off with Narada Muni and Srila Vyasadeva. Well, it starts off immediately, but a lot of it in chapters 1 to 6 is mainly about Srila Narada Muni and Vyasadeva. Srila Vyasadeva feeling despondent, and Srila Narada Muni as a spiritual master, one who knows the disciple's heart and is able to give very good guidance to his disciple, Srila Vyasadeva. And Srila Vyasadeva is no ordinary being, as we know. He is the author of all of our scriptures, the Vedas, and very many others. And it deals with Krishna in Hastinapur and Dvaraka in chapters 7 to 11. It speaks about Krishna's Aishwarya Bhav and his mood as a king. Shishi Radha Gopinath Ki. And his activities in Hastinapur and Dwaraka. Chapters 12 to 15 deals with Maharaj Parikshit and the Pandavas when they decide to retire from kingly life. It deals about, Maharaj Parikshit's birth was no ordinary feat. There are actually two stories about how Maharaj Parikshit was saved within the womb. The first one actually is that Ashwatthama had sent the Brahmastra, and the fetus within the womb of Uttara, which was Maharaj Parikshit, had died, and then Krishna had revived him. There's the other story that Krishna, which I like better, that Krishna manifest himself, had entered the womb of Uttara and manifest as a protective shield around Maharaj Parikshit and prevented him from the scorching heat of Ashwatthama's Brahmastra. So in this way, Parikshit Maharaj was saved. Ashwatthama, as we know, was trying to kill Maharaj Parikshit because he was the last surviving heir and of the Yadu dynasty. And if he was annihilated, Ashwatthama had felt, okay, this was it, that's the end of them. But Krishna saved Parikshit Maharaj in this way. And chapter 16 to 19 deals with Maharaj Parikshit in detail, about him, his life, his ruling, and also how he came to be cursed by the Brahmana's son. And it's really sad for me to read that part, but it deals with how just in a moment of sort of indecision, or as we say, momentary fall down, as it's described in Bhagavatam, that he garlanded the neck of the sage with a snake for the sage's non-response to his request for food or water. And he lamented very much when he got back to the palace, and he was already, being such a great devotee that he was already speaking and thinking in terms of, okay, Krishna, I've committed such an offense to your devotee, and this feeling he felt, I don't know, he said, I don't know how I should, what is the proper recourse for me to do this. And just then he heard the news of the sage's son cursing him to die within 7 days. And then, in his mood, he actually thought, yes, this is most befitting for me. So then he gave the kingdom over to his son and went to the bank of the Ganges and decided to sit there and fast for the next 7 days and to meditate. And it was then that he had seen the mysterious appearance of Shukadeva Goswami and asked him, what is the duty of one who is about to die? A very pertinent question for all of us, because, I think we're also in that kind of position where maybe we don't have 7 days, but at some point or the other, I guess we know that this is inevitably coming to us also. So I'd like to make the point about being this, about Shukadeva Goswami also being the person Bhagavata, because we know that we have this form of the book Bhagavata, but Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and various acharyas also have said that The book Bhagavata is very potent, and the person Bhagavata is also potent. But to hear of the book Bhagavata from the person Bhagavata is extremely potent. So hearing from Shukadev Goswami was very significant in this sense, because he was so qualified. He was a Bhagavata. And thus when he spoke Bhagavatam to Srila Parikshit Maharaj, it was that much more pertinent. It was that much more powerful. The message was more relishable in that sense. So yes, this is a South African mango. And as you can see, my thumbprints are still on it. I just moved it slightly to get the right angle. But this is a tree at home in my backyard, and just wanted to get the right picture so I could show you just exactly how precious this mango is. It is about this size. And when it's fully ripe, we don't really have to go and check it. We can smell this fruit. It's so potent. And if we touch it, by the slightest touch, this fruit is already indented. I just moved it very slightly to take the picture, and already my thumbprint was into it. Because it's so soft and it's so nectarian, and you have to handle it very carefully. So like that, this ripened fruit of the desire tree of the Vedic knowledge, which is Srimad Bhagavatam, is kind of similarly handed down to us in this fashion in Guru Parampara. They have this, I mean, we have a lot of different Vedic scriptures, but you have a tree and then you have a fruit, and this fruit is the most desired thing from the tree. So this fruit is also very delicate. So when it's passed from one person to the other, it needs to be passed with a lot of care and attention. Very, very delicately. Or else, you know, the fruit will spoil, the fruit will break, the fruit will mash. It's not very, how do you say, it's not very aesthetic, it's not very palatable. But all these things are taken into consideration from one who passes this kind of delicate fruit to the other, to the other, to the other. And finally, it gets down to us in the form of Shukadev Goswami, who makes it very, very palatable to us. Because many of the times we have so much nectar, but it's not in a form that we can digest, so to say, or that we can take. Nectar is very much available, but it cannot be relished. If someone doesn't understand it, or someone does not have access to it, in that sense. So Shukadev Goswami, he is the most qualified and most unparalleled speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam, because he is able to do that. He's able to take this nectarian fruit. It's so beautiful, so fragrant, so nectarian already. But still, just by him being able to relate to us, Srimad Bhagavatam, it becomes that much more relishable. Actually, it's said that Shuka is the word for a parrot. And Shukadev Goswami is compared to this parrot. But not because he can recite it, you know, word for word, like a parrot would. But because when a parrot's beak cuts this fruit, it becomes very, very sweet. An intense flavor is given. I don't know if you've ever seen parrots actually eat mangoes, but this is typically how they would do it. And although there are other many mangoes around, the parrots, they know which one is the correct one to get all the flavor and all the juice and all the taste from. So although there's one right next to it, the parrot's not even touching that. But he's already picking at this one. So anyone who knows this, they know that these other mangoes are not ready. They're not. You shouldn't even touch them. But this one where the parrot touches, that is the one. That is the one you should definitely get. You know, because Shukadev Goswami has touched it. It is said that when Bhagavatam was recited through the lips of Shukadev Goswami, it emanated from his lips. Just like that, like how a parrot transforms this fruit, makes it even more relishable, even sweeter by the touch of its lips. Such is what happened with Shukadev Goswami. A little bit about his life story. Being the mysterious character that I found him to be, I always wanted to know, so where has Shukadev Goswami come from and where will he go? And it's said that Shukadev Goswami is actually a parrot of Srimati Radharani's. She has two parrots. One is Shuka and the other one is Shari. And Shuka and Shari, they relate messages between the divine couple. and between Vrindadevi also, to make arrangements for the divine couple in Vrindavan. And when Srimati Radhika was leaving the material world, winding up her pastimes here on earth, and Shukadev Goswami was distraught. He felt very much aggrieved that he would have some kind of transcendental separation from Srimati Radhika. Although he is eternally with her there, also for the sake of Leela, he was meant to be left behind. And so Shukadev Goswami, he then pleaded with Radhika, "What shall I do?" And Srimati Radhika gave him the blessing that wherever you hear Srimad Bhagavatam being recited, that's where you will feel me, feel my presence. So Shukadev Goswami started to search out on the planet where would he find the recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam. And he came upon Kailash, where Lord Shiva was narrating to Gauri, or Mother Parvati, his wife, the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Shukadev Goswami, in his parrot form, went into one of the trees and camouflaged himself, and he was hearing very attentively, with great attention and great devotion, Srimad Bhagavatam being recited by Lord Shiva. And as he was listening, he was drowning in this kind of ecstasy, but he was noticing that Mother Parvati was sort of falling off to sleep. Like sometimes if we're very tired, we nod off from our busy day. So Mother Parvati, she was also like sort of nodding off. Before that, she was attentive and she was going, yes, showing or signifying that she was awake to Lord Shiva. So Shukadev Goswami noticed this, and as he was noticing her nodding off, he decided to also imitate her. So he imitated Mother Parvati, going, yes, And Lord Shiva, because he was reciting, and he was relishing it also, reciting Bhagavatam, and so his eyes were not necessarily opened, but Mother Parvati was sort of asleep by then, and Shukadev Goswami was imitating her voice. So Lord Shiva thought, okay, yes, she's attentive, and I can go on, and I can go on. And so Shukadev Goswami was relishing in this way, hearing Bhagavatam. And then, when Lord Shiva had come to a point where he asked a question, like he was, yes, so Bhavani, do you understand? And Lord Parvati is like, oh, I'm sorry, please forgive me, my lord, I fell asleep. And Lord Shiva was bewildered. What? How can this be? Then who is going? And so he decided to look around. Oh, who is this person, and he looked around and he sees one parrot. He sees the parrot on the tree and he goes with his trident. He goes to Sukadev Goswami and he goes with his trident and he wants to kill the parrot. So he chases him all around. And of course, through transcendental personalities, somehow the parrot, he hears, I think, another dialogue happening. And this time, the dialogue was taking place between Srila Vyasadev and his wife. And at this point, Srila Shukadev Goswami was there also, and he noticed that the wife of Srila Vyasadev yawned. And at that point, he made himself extremely tiny. Extremely, extremely tiny. And he entered into her mouth. And Shiva was still trying to find him, and he wanted to kill him. And Vyasadev noticed Lord Shiva with his trident, quite a sight, you can imagine, in a sage's hermitage. And he was like, oh my dear lord, what is the disturbance? And so Shiva told Shiva Vyasadev that, I was reciting Srimad Bhagavatam, and this parrot was there hearing, and whoever hears Srimad Bhagavatam is going to get liberated. And then Srila Vyasadeva said to him, well then, the parrot will get liberated then. Isn't that a good thing? Shiva agreed. He was like, okay. And he left. But that parrot had taken shelter in the body of the wife of Srila Vyasadeva. And it said that he stayed there within the womb for 16 years. Sri Sukadeva Goswami is no ordinary person. The longest a child would stay in the womb of a mother is, what, 9 months? 9 and something? But 16 whole years. I'm sure we know from these and many other instances the extraordinary nature of Srila Shukadeva Goswami. He was actually a liberated soul, and he didn't want to come out into the material world and to deal with the contamination of the material world. And this picture is very pertinent to the bottom, because it said that Srila Vyasadeva was so concerned because it was 16 years already and he had not come out. So he actually had to ask Krishna himself to please come and plead with Shukadeva Goswami. So Krishna came and he assured Srila Shukadeva Goswami that he will never be touched by the material nature. He will never be contaminated by the material nature at all. And then Shukadeva Goswami agreed to come on. And he manifested himself. 16-year-old, beautiful. And he didn't stay at home either. Much to the distraught of his parents. Can you imagine? 16, he is just born and he leaves. I mean, you know, when a child is born, parents, they want to hold their child, show the child off to the world, celebrate. And here, already he is gone. Srila Vyasadeva was distraught. And the only way that he could get Srila Shukadeva Goswami to come back home is by reading him or reciting shlokas from Bhagavatam. It's the only thing that attracted Srila Shukadeva Goswami. So he had learnt this nectarian subject matter from his father, Srila Vyasadeva, and thus recited it to us. So I'd like to touch on his unparalleled position. I sort of touched on it throughout, somewhat, but I think for me the biggest incidents where I sort of had a premonition, so to speak, about Srila Shukadeva Goswami was that I heard the incident where he was walking by a lake, a beautiful celestial looking lake with damsels bathing in the lake. And while his father was, you know, trying to get him to come back home, that kind of thing, many incidents, this would happen a lot of times that Shukadeva would leave. And his father would be, you know, running after him, try and get him back, reciting Bhagavatam. It's quite a thing. But as you can see in the picture, Srila Shukadeva Goswami is walking by and these heavenly damsels, they are all very calm and looking, gazing upon him. Very loving kind of mood. Because this is the thing, he walked around naked because he did not identify himself with the material body. So everyone sort of perceived that. These damsels, they could perceive that. That here is someone who is not on the bodily platform. Here is someone that is realized and is above that. So they were very comfortable being undressed in the presence of Srila Shukadeva Goswami, although he was a 16-year-old youth. Very beautiful, very attractive youth. Yet, when Srila Vyasadeva, as you can see he is coming from the back, when Srila Vyasadeva came by, all the women hurried to go and dress themselves. And Srila Vyasadeva was puzzled. He couldn't understand this. He was like, you know, just before my son had walked by and you were perfectly fine, yet when I walk by you're completely disturbed, you know, how is it so? You know, and the damsels, they actually told Srila Vyasadeva, you know, or respected sage, your son does not see it on the bodily platform. Your son is not living on a bloody platform. He is a self-realized soul. And we perceive him as that. And although you are very exalted, you are still a householder and make some distinction to that effect. So, hence our behavior. No offense by that. But, you know, we are very much attracted to your son. He is very beautiful. But we know that he is beyond this bodily platform. So, I'd like to have a short review of what covered in this lecture so far. So we glanced first at Srimad Bhagavatam, sort of giving our ideas on what we thought of when we first encountered Srimad Bhagavatam. Then I looked at the 10 topics that were covered in Srimad Bhagavatam as a whole and narrowed that down to some of the topics that were covered in the first canto, and looked at Srila Shukadeva Goswami as the speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam. And then I narrated his life story, also highlighting his unique position and unequivalent status. His unparalleled position was discussed also towards the end. And I'd like to thank everyone for their kind attention and patience with my technical difficulties, and I hope that the presentation still managed to make some kind of useful impact and give some understanding into the unparalleled position and the uniqueness of Srila Shukadeva Goswami. Thank you very much. And Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. If there are any comments, questions, or feedback, please. Anyone? Okay, so thank you again very, very much. And yes, please give me your blessings. Hare Krishna. Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.